It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
There is at least one Democratic candidate on the ballot in every single one of Texas's 36 congressional districts. 26 of those races are contested. The state of Texas hasn't seen this much blue since the early 90s. It also comes at a time when 8 sitting members of the Texas House are not seeking re-election, most of them Republican. But most Texans today seem to be talking about the big U.S. Senate race. Texas Congressman Beto O'Rourke, the Democratic frontrunner in today's primary, is hoping to steal the seat away from Republican incumbent Senator Ted Cruz. Cruz, who is seeking his second term, blames the momentum Democrats are enjoying in Texas on the, quote, liberals' hate of President Trump. The former presidential candidate himself telling Fox News he thinks Republicans statewide will be just fine so long as conservatives rally and show up in force come November. Yet many voters we spoke with today say Donald Trump had zero to do with their decision. Instead, they're more on board with the idea of draining the swamp, saying they still don't feel like the people's best interests are at heart with the status quo.
All right, that was Casey. Well, we're going to interrupt him. Actions. That was Casey Stegall, and that was a report yesterday on the primary that took place in Texas yesterday. So you're wondering what happened, aren't you? You know what? So are we. We were looking at Texas media outlets to try to find out more than we wish we knew. But this is what I can tell you. Casey mentioned, of course, the Senate race. These are primaries now. In the Democratic primary, Beto O'Rourke, who Casey's been covering pretty much, and who I've heard is going to give Senator Cruz a run for his money, is the Democratic challenger now. He won by 61.8% of the vote. Ted Cruz won by 85.3% of the Republican vote. There's a huge disparity in the vote numbers there, but you can see it's true that Texas is becoming more blue. No question about it. So they will face off in the actual primary. Greg Abbott won 90.4% of the Republican primary votes. And beyond that, I can't tell you about the statewide offices yet. We'll have to stay tuned today when everybody in Texas wakes up, all those news people, and actually report to us what the results are. A couple of other things in the 21st district, which we talked about a couple of times, which is around Austin. There will be a runoff for the Democrats and the Republicans. Texas is a runoff state. If no candidate in a primary gets more than 50%, there has to be a runoff election between the top two. So this happened on the Democratic side. It happened on the Republican side. On the Democratic side, the winner was Mary Wilson with 30.9%. Joseph Kopser came in second with 29%. They'll face off in a few weeks, really. And we'll be talking about this again because this race will be important too. And I'm sure there will be other runoffs that we'll talk about. And on the Republican side, the one that got the most, there was probably, I think, 16 candidates in the Republican primary. So the chances of anybody getting 50% were next to nothing. In fact, all of the others besides the ones I'm going to mention collectively got 40.5% of the vote. So the remaining three split the rest of those votes. Chip Roy came in first with 27.1%. of the precinct. No, but that's the amount of votes that he got, the percentage. Matt McCall came in second with 16.9%. So they will face off in another runoff in a few weeks. And once we know that date, we'll bring that to your attention. Interesting news out of Alabama, a follow-up. It looks as though an organization was formed just 1 month before Election Day between Judge Roy Moore and Doug Jones. They call themselves Highway 31. And they presented themselves as a local PAC. It looks as though they spent more in this race to defeat Judge Moore than anyone else. They spent $4.4 million in support of Doug Jones. It was Highway 31, and everyone thought it was a local PAC, but they refused, by the way, on their filing papers to note the source of their income. Who was behind them? Well, now we know because there's a lawsuit that's been filed by... Yes, just a second. I wanted to give you the exact... It's being fired by an organization, Campaign Legal Center, in Alabama. I believe they're based in Alabama, is filing a complaint against Highway 31. They filed it just on Monday. And because now we're finding out, this PAC was primarily funded by three outside groups. $3.2 million from Senate Majority PAC, which is a PAC with ties to Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. $910,000 from Democrat-aligned Priorities USA. That is a George Soros PAC. And $250,000 from the League of Conservative Voters. So Highway 31 was not a local effort. It was a national effort who received tons of money from outside sources. They did not reveal that, so they're being sued for that. And that just shows you how, you know, dirty what we're all involved, what we're trying to write. That's how bad it is. And we need to write it. There's no question about it. And I think we should make every attempt to do that. There was big news yesterday, more shakeups in the White House. But I have something to say about that after we listen to John Roberts. Let's listen.
Counsel Gary Cohn, who's been the president's right-hand man when it comes to economic policy in this country, is stepping down. The White House says that he'll be staying on for a few more weeks, though, transitioning to a new economic advisor who will come in. We don't know who that will be just yet. White House officials say that this has actually been in the works for several weeks now. Cohn wanted to get tax reform done. He wanted to get regulatory reform done. He's been with the president for more than 14 months now, and just thought that he accomplished what he wanted to get done, and now it's time to go out and do something else. The White House is playing down the notion, though, that Cohn is leaving over a rather strident disagreement with the president and some of his other top advisors over the issue of massive tariffs against steel and aluminum. The president talking about imposing a 10% tariff on aluminum, a 25% tariff on steel. Cohen thinks it's a bad idea, but it looks like he is on the verge of losing that internal debate. But the White House saying that Cohen wouldn't leave over something like this. He's had disagreements with the president in the past, and he's not about to pack up his things and leave just because of a single issue. The president, though, with glowing things to say about Gary Cohn, he's leaving on good terms. The president saying, Gary has been my chief economic advisor and did a superb job in driving our agenda, helping to deliver historic tax cuts and reforms and unleashing the American economy once again. He is a rare talent, and I thank him for his dedicated service to the American people. Cohen, it has been an honor to serve my country and enact pro-growth economic policies to benefit the American people, in particular the passage of historic tax reform. I'm grateful to the president for giving me this opportunity, and I wish him and the administration great success in the future.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt John because the whole way it's couched, of course, is this is chaos and more problems in the Trump White House. But I have to tell you, many people are rejoicing at the resignation of Gary Cohn. It looks as though, I'm just telling you, it looks as though that inside the White House there is really a shakeup, and the shakeup seems to be shaking out some of the influence of the left. And believe me, there's been tons of it. And Gary Cohn, as a New Yorker, and look, I don't know him personally. I just know that many people on the front lines feel he's been a real detrimental influence because he has values that are not the things that the president campaigned on, the things he said he wanted to do, and values that may be at odds with many of us. And that Gary has, you know, I'm sure he did. I have to say, you have to thank him for his role in passing tax cut legislation and also for being a public servant, regardless of if he disagrees with us on issues. But in terms of just policy, it's probably a big improvement that Gary Cohn's not going to be there doing what he's doing. And God willing, the president will appoint someone with more conservative values than Gary Cohn. And I think it's interesting, isn't it, that Ivanka and her husband, well, Jared especially, his clearance has been downgraded so much that he really is going to be handicapped in terms of his own duties. So the future for him and Ivanka is kind of uncertain, as far as I'm concerned, right now in the White House. And that, too, is good news. Just saying, things are shaking out, maybe in a good way. So while you hear the spin, don't be discouraged. It may all be coming into something better. I want to report to you from Media Research Center. They're so good about tracking media coverage, and they have an interesting article this morning on Newsbusters. They did an analysis of ABC, CBS, and NBC evening newscasts in January and February, and shock of all shocks, found 10 times more negative comments about the president than positive statements. And they found the ongoing Russian investigation once again swamped all other topics. And in terms of just percentages, 91% of the coverage on President Trump by these networks was negative. 91%, only 9% positive. They also looked at 505 evening news stories that mentioned President Trump or his administration in January and February. Out of 851 total minutes of airtime devoted to the administration, the network spent almost one-fourth of it, 204 minutes, on the Russia investigation, eclipsing other major topics such as the economy, immigration reform, and even the gun debate. There's a lot more I could say about this article, but we'll put this on our Facebook page because it's worth reading. There's a lot more detail. I think it's fascinating what they're finding. They did say that the last period of time before this that they were looking at it, there was 90% negative coverage. But during the campaign, that President Trump got 91% negative coverage as well. So it's a pattern, and it continues. Let's see. The interesting things happening in national security. Let me see. Let me move to this. Do you remember that Australian diplomat who said, he's the ambassador to London, he said that he had a conversation with Trump campaign advisor George Papadopoulos in London in a bar about 2016, and that Papadopoulos had talked to something about his connection with Russians. And by the way, as my understanding is, just to put this in context, that George Papadopoulos, who the FBI used as the reason for opening this surveillance of the president, was a low-level, even very loosely categorized staffer. I'm not sure he had much influence in the Trump campaign. But okay, so he was there, he had a name, he had a title. Many people think that his conversation with this ambassador was kind of like boasting, bragging about things that he maybe wasn't qualified to talk about. Nevertheless, they used that conversation to open the investigation into Russia and the alleged Trump collusion. So now we know that that Australian ambassador who reported that, who started that whole investigation, his name is Alexander Downer, was a huge Clinton supporter. In fact, when he was Australian foreign minister, he secured $25 million in aid from Australia to help the Clinton Foundation. So there's more to say about that article, but that's a pretty stunning report. We also find out that the FBI did not tell Congress about Downer's prior connection to the Clinton Foundation. And, of course, Republicans all over this are concerned that the FBI, in fact, Jim Jordan said, we continue to get new information every week. It seems that that sort of underscores the fact that the FBI hasn't been square with us. Okay, so that leads into this next thing. We're finding out that Peter Strzok, and he's the guy that had the affair with Lisa Page, who hated President Trump and it seemed was doing everything he could to stop him from being elected. We find out now that Peter Strzok knew that Mrs. Clinton's private email server may have been breached by, according to the metadata, that this report came in. I don't have time to explain this very well, except that they had indications that it had been violated, and Peter Strzok, who was overseeing this, did nothing about it. A source said nothing happened, and that is a serious breach. Remember that Comey claimed that we find no direct evidence that Secretary Clinton's personal email domain was successfully hacked. We know that Peter Strzok actually helped Comey with the wording of that, and we now know that Peter Strzok knew that there might have been, very likely, if he'd bothered to investigate it, a breach of her home-installed email server. Very serious allegations continue to come out. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, I'm Brant. Maybe you've heard me talking about MediShare, but now I give you my friend Sherry.
Yes, I have loved MediShare. Loved it.
Is that all you have to say? Because this will be a really short
No, I really do love it. I've saved hundreds a month. And overall, I just think it's a better choice of a healthcare program for me. I'm really happy with it. And honestly, normally, I don't even like talking about this stuff.
Nobody does.
But MediShare is different. MediShare members share each other's healthcare bills. We pray for each other. It's a not-for-profit, so we all save money.
True. Tell them about the thing.
What thing?
The online thing.
Oh, yeah, I used that the other night. MediShare members can now access a doctor online 24/7. You can get a prescription for the flu or something just that fast.
So MediShare can save you hundreds a month. You get to be part of the community. You get a huge network of doctors and providers to choose from.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
It's all pretty awesome.
The final verdict from Jerry. So call 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM-23. 855-PSALM-23.
You shall not murder. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. This is the sixth commandment of the Ten Commandments. You shall not murder. We are asking schools all over America to put this on their marquees, put this on their signs out in front of their school for 1 week to remind America's students that innocent life is precious. Help us spread the word about this campaign to your friends and family. Please go to our website, afa.net, afa.net, and sign our open letter to America's schools. We need to proclaim this message, you shall not murder, across the land. Why? Because gun control alone will not solve matters of the heart. We need our young people to understand that murder is a violation of God's law, and also it's a violation of the laws all across this land. So help us. Go to afa.net and spread the word.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
So my name is Atara. I'm a senior and my major is psychology. I love Truett. Maybe a lot of other schools out there. You can go to bigger schools. You can go to schools that's way far away from home. But in the end, one of the things that I realized is that God called me here, and that's why Truett is the perfect place for me. And if God called you here, then it's the perfect place for you also.
Are you called? Visit Truett.edu today.
If you happen to be in the library at Simmons College in Boston, somebody sneezes, whatever you do, don't say God bless you. That's because the librarians believe that phrase can spark something worse than a microaggression. It could spark an Islamophobic microaggression. That bit of info tucked inside the college's anti-oppression library guide. It's not an official college policy, but you know the drill. The librarians, a real sensitive bunch, warn that phrases like God bless you and Merry Christmas can make Muslims feel slighted. The resource guide also introduced some new words into the nation's lexicon, words like Christian privilege. For example, if you expect to get the day off on Good Friday or Christmas Eve, well, you have Christian privilege. Clearly, the librarians at Simmons College have plenty of book smarts, but they don't have the sense God gave a goose. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
What changed for me was the knowledge that there are 24 witnesses that Michael Horowitz, the inspector general, would not have access to. So your options are DOJ investigated themselves. They can't do that because of conflict of interest. Let the inspector general do it. Now, I'm a big fan of Mike Horowitz, but he has no jurisdiction over witnesses. When I counted up 24 witnesses that he would not be able to access were he to investigate it, yeah, only one conclusion, that's special counsel.
Who's on that list?
Anyone who no longer works for the Department of Justice or the FBI, State Department, you may recall a couple of weeks ago there was some indication that State Department employees were feeding information to Fusion GPS. They would be outside the reach of the Inspector General.
That was Trey Gowdy talking yesterday from Fox Special Report. Trey was on with the head of the Judiciary Committee, Bob Goodlatte, and they are calling now openly. They've sent a letter to Attorney General Sessions asking for special counsel because, as they explain, the Inspector General, who the Attorney General has tasked with investigating all of this, does have limited power. The kinds of people that could not be subpoenaed, could not be made to talk, are like James Comey, like former Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, like former Acting Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates, like Dana Bointe, whose name is not as familiar to you, but I don't have time to explain that. But Rod Rosenstein, all of this stuff. So they're asking for a special counsel. They're very serious about it. By the way, House Judiciary Chairman Bob Goodlatte has direct oversight authority over the U.S. Department of Justice and the federal courts. And that is his job. He's also over the FISA court. So they are within their rights to ask for this. We'll see what happens. I have to say I do support it. Based on their explanation, I absolutely do support this. I think it is absolutely necessary. I want to move to guns because there's a lot happening on guns around the country. I got a word just this morning that the Congress, our Congress, United States Congress, is getting ready to consider some really bad things, that the leadership has sort of done a bait and switch. I know that's a shock. I recognize that we would never imagine that Paul Ryan and his leaders, his friends at the top, would be disingenuous with their conservative partners that serve with them. But it looks like they're going to do that on guns. And the issue is fixed NICS, which is what John Cornyn is pushing in the Senate. And just to mention it briefly, because I'm planning on going on to this, into this in greater detail when I know more. The fixed NICS, it looks as it stands right now, would stop veterans who are having someone else do their finances from being able to own and use guns. And it's a very loose, broad kind of provision. There are other things about it that are very alarming. And so we will be getting into that. It's going to be coming up soon. And so we're going to have to really ride herd on our congressmen to make sure that they don't do something really foolish that really has nothing to do with the shootings and the killings in Florida. And speaking of those, I want you to hear something now that has gone viral. There is a delegate in Virginia named Nick Freitas. Nick is a Republican member of the Virginia House of Delegates, and he stood up on the floor of the Virginia House. Now, all of the state houses, you know, are considering various gun measures. And so Nick stood up on the floor of the Virginia Assembly just last Friday, and I'm actually going to play his whole statement. We're going to do it in little bits here, but I want you to hear it because he says some things. He said things that actually made Democrats get up and walk out. So he's talking about guns, and this is what Delegate Nick Freitas had to say.
Delegate from Culpeper, Delegate Freitas.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise for a point of personal privilege.
Delegate has the floor.
So over the last several days, Mr. Speaker, there's been a lot of discussion about an open and honest debate with respect to school shootings, gun violence, gun control, etc. And an open and honest debate, as I understand it, is one that would rely on data, facts, evidence, analysis, reason, logic, etc., etc. And I'm certainly willing to have that debate. I think if we were going to look seriously at school shootings and gun control, we would analyze things like, why do all mass shootings seem to take place in gun-free zones? Wouldn't it be reasonable to test whether or not the efficacy of gun-free zones have actually achieved what their intended intent is? We'd start to look at most of these shooters come from broken homes. What sort of government policies have actually encouraged broken homes? You can look at left-leaning think tanks like the Brookings Institute that will actually say that some of it can be attributed to various cultural changes that happened in the 60s to include the abortion industry. You can look at more conservative-leaning organizations that will say that the welfare state contributed significantly to dismantling the family as families became more and more dependent upon the government than they were mothers and fathers in the home raising children. We could look at various status with those areas within the United States and around the world that have strict gun control measures and what their crime rates look like, whether it's Chicago, New York City, Washington, D.C., and others that have incredibly strict gun laws, and yet for some reason it hasn't seemed to stop the gun violence in those particular areas. We can look at the analysis out of 538, which is considered more of a left of center data analysis think tank, where you have several analysts now confirm through the data that they were looking at, not just in the United States, but in Canada, Great Britain, and Australia, that they were shocked that the data did not support what they thought gun control measures would actually achieve.
All right, that's the first part of it. And, of course, it's as though he's been talking to Professor John Lott, who was a frequent guest with us. That's a crime prevention Freitas.org. That's where you can get John's information. But Delegate Freitas, of course, mentions the things we talk about. There, all these killings are taking place in gun-free zones. There are kids that are messed up. They are confused. There are warning signs. There are so many things that we need to look at besides now not making it possible for Americans to get guns. But he doesn't stop there. He digs in even more, and I'm not sure at what point the Democrats started walking out, but let's listen further. This is Delegate Nick Freitas from Virginia.
We can look at the number of cases within the United States where a gun has been used for self-defense. Estimates range everywhere from 100,000 uses to over close to a million uses within the United States. Now, some organizations and some reporters only want to report on the ones where a gun was used and it actually resulted in the death or maiming of the perpetrator. But if you look at the ones where the gun was used and the mere presence of the firearm actually dissuaded a criminal from committing an act of violence, an act of rape, an act of murder, the number shoots up. It skyrockets. So when people on this side talk about the importance of the Second Amendment, please understand it's not just some base philosophical conviction that we all have. It is rooted in the idea that while we may be a post-Enlightenment society, the vast majority of horrible atrocities that we've seen have happened in those post-Enlightenment societies. Has happened as a result of governments systematically disarming citizens and claiming themselves to be the sole responsible party for their security, and then turning on those same citizens and punishing them. That's the most egregious cases. But in the individual cases of self-defense, that's why the people on this side of the aisle hold the Second Amendment in such high esteem, because we honestly believe that you have an inherent right to defend yourself. And your ability to defend yourself should not be excluded to your size. Firearms provide someone that is weaker and not as fast the ability to actually defend themselves from a stronger attacker. Some of the other things that we would look at, and some of the things I would hope we would have bipartisan support for, all of us agree that we need to make sure that our students are better protected when they go to schools. One of the things that we would look at is arming certain teachers. Not every teacher. But a teacher that is comfortable with it, is former law enforcement, is former military, that is now in the classroom. Delegate Plum said yesterday that that was ridiculous to consider. Why? Is it because the other side of this debate will only accept one quote-unquote solution to this problem, and that is tearing apart or gutting the Second Amendment? And I understand, we're going to mention just a couple of the bills that were done this year, right? Background checks, getting rid of bump stocks. If you're wondering the other reason why we can't have an honest debate over this one, is because, quite frankly, I don't think any of us on this side of the aisle believe you when you say that's all you want to do. It'll be bump stocks, it'll be background checks, then it'll be different kind of background checks that register the guns. Then after that, it'll be we need to ban assault weapons. What's an assault weapon? Something that looks scary. Then after that, it'll be semi-automatic rifles. After that, it'll be semi-automatic handguns. Then it'll be revolvers, shotguns. Because when the policies fail to produce the results you are promising to your constituents, you'll be back with more reasons on why we've got to infringe on Second Amendment rights.
All right, that's Delegate Nick Freitas. He has one more part to his speech, which we're going to play in a second. That was on the floor of the House of Delegates in Virginia just last Friday. It has gone viral. You know, you can understand why it's so important to pay attention and to elect really good local candidates. That's where they're groomed. That's where we can actually see who they are while they are still really obligated to people close to them, where they have to keep their promises, where people actually know who they are, where they came from, what they stand for. And so we have some real champions in local governments. In some states, precious few. I think, again, it's because people are not paying attention. It's just it's only a state race, or it's too much trouble, or, you know, I'm busy with other things. But people in Virginia, Virginia has been a real standard up until it's the last under Obama. It has just really been inundated and overrun and targeted to turn blue. And so it is almost blue. It's purple. But the people of Virginia, because they live so close to D.C., I have found are very savvy. They pay attention. And they are involved. It's a great example for all of us. You know, I've talked to the folks at Goochland Tea Party so many times on the air here around Richmond, because they've just done wonderful things, because they united at a local level and took over their school board, their county offices, and helped to elect Congressman Dave Brat and defeat Eric Cantor. Nobody saw it coming. But it's because the local people got organized and started working together. But that's a sideline. Actually, now back to the gun issue. Delegate Freitas makes some great points. He talks about the fact that we have an inherent right to defend ourselves. And guns even the playing field for smaller people versus big people, women versus men. It is a way to defend yourself, not only in society, but also against against a potentially out of control totalitarian government, which we know has happened repeatedly over and over and over again in history. And that's why our founding fathers gave us the right to bear arms. All right, so he also talked about that we need to better protect our kids in the schools. But he says the other side only wants one solution. All they talk about is doing away with guns. They don't talk about all these other complicated problems. And then he really nails the nail in the coffin. And I'm sure at this point, this must be where the Democrats walked out. You can't hear them, but you have to hear what Delegate Freitas said. Let's listen.
The other reason why it's really difficult to have an honest and open debate about this is because of this members of this body comparing members on this side of the aisle to Nazis. Members on the other side of the aisle saying that when a 24-year-old teacher gets up and says that the whole debate is between the Second Amendment or her life, that's a false dilemma. And quite frankly, one of the ones that I found the most offensive, along with being compared to Nazis, was being compared to segregationists. I just want to remind everyone very quickly. It was not our party that supported slavery, that fought women's suffrage, that rounded up tens of thousands of Asian Americans and put them in concentration camps, that supported Jim Crow, that supported segregation, or supported mass resistance. That wasn't our party. That was the Democrat Party. Now, I'm thrilled that Democrats no longer believe that, and I don't believe that a single current member of this body who is a Democrat ever believe those things, but I would really appreciate it if every time you want to make a powerful point, you don't project the sins, the atrocities, and the injustices that the Democratic Party perpetrated on others onto us. So if we want to have an open and honest debate, I am all for that. Let's do that. But it does start with a certain degree of mutual respect. It starts with a certain degree of not assuming that the only reason why we believe in the Second Amendment is because the NRA paid us off. Well, if that's the sort of logic you want to use, why don't you go take a look at how much money the NRA spends and how much money Planned Parenthood spends? Because when I get up here and I talk about abortion, I don't assume that you're all bought and paid for by Planned Parenthood. I don't assume you're horrible people because I disagree with you on a policy position. I assume you have deep convictions and that we can have an argument and a debate about it. But if you're not willing to reciprocate that level of respect, well, don't be surprised when it becomes more difficult to talk about these things. Because there is a lot that we can do, and there is a lot that we need to do to ensure the security of our children and our citizens. But yes, we are going to have a problem with so-called solutions which infringe on people's liberty under the promise the government will provide for their security. Because ultimately, in this last school shooting, we had a perfect example of government being engaged over 30 times and still failing to provide security for those students. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
All right, that was Delegate Nick Freitas of Virginia. That was his speech last Friday on the Assembly floor. We'll put that on our Facebook page, by the way, and I'm hoping that he can join us tomorrow morning here in radio. And also, if he can't, we'll do it early next week. But isn't it refreshing to hear straight talk? And I think that's why people love President Trump with all of his flaws. It's just to hear someone say what they think. And in the case of Delegate Freitas, to speak the truth on an issue, the hard truth, and to stand and face his opponents in such a courageous way and say, we cannot have a dialogue if there's not mutual respect. And if you are going to denigrate and diminish us in this way and accuse us of these horrible things like being Nazis and racists, we can't have a discussion. And so it's refreshing to hear that, and thank God for his courage. By the way, he's challenging Senator Tim Kaine, for his seat is for Senate. And so you'll be hearing more about Delegate Freitas, and you'll hear him on this show soon. All right, so stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
And they withstood King Uzziah and said to him, "It is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner." By withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accord, President Trump not only protected the American economy, he defended the Constitution. Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 says, "The president shall have power by and with the advice and consent of the Senate to make treaties, provided 2/3 of the senators present concur." That means no president has the unilateral authority to bind the United States to an international treaty. The U.S. Constitution, great reading for citizens and presidents.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
We care about justice
and aren't afraid to ask hard questions.
In fact, we care about a lot of things.
We have passion for truth.
We are EngageMagazine.net, an online group of millennials brought together by a common goal: to share truth, apply scripture, and to get involved in our lost and hurting world. EngageMagazine.net hosts discussions that help you apply a biblical worldview to your daily life. EngageMagazine.net.
Whenever we read the gospel accounts of the life of Jesus, we're often startled by some of the surprising things he said. This week on Pathway to Victory, we'll look at the radical claims that Jesus makes in the Gospel of Luke about discipleship, lost things, money, and hell. Join us as we continue our series called Reigniting Your Passion for Christ, this Monday through Friday on Pathway to Victory.
Join us for Pathway to Victory with Pastor Robert Jeffress, weekday mornings at 6 Central on American Family Radio.
Attention all Christians who would like to become more effective in presenting and defending their beliefs. This is Alex McFarland, and I urge you to attend the 2018 edition of Truth for a New Generation, the conference on apologetics, worldview, and evidence for the Christian faith. TNG is coming to Greensboro, North Carolina, March 23 and 24. Hear an amazing lineup, including Josh McDowell, apologist J. Warner Wallace, Todd Starnes from Fox News, and much, much more.
This is Abraham Hamilton III of the American Family Association. We're in a battle for the future of our nation, and I want to see you at Truth for a New Generation as we pray and get equipped to defend the faith, asking God to save our nation.
Don't miss Truth for a New Generation, March 23 and 24, Greensboro, North Carolina. You may register at truthforanewgeneration.com.
Presented in part by the American Family Association.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. So, North Korea says it's willing to meet with South Korea's president, negotiate with the United States, and freeze its nuclear and ballistic missile programs. Has the North's dictator Kim Jong-un been so panicked by President Trump's much-decried belligerency that he has actually abandoned the decades-long ambitions of his dynasty to have and brandish nuclear weapons? Or is Kim simply doing what his family has done for years? A classic bait and switch masquerading as a charm offensive. In that case, protracted negotiations will lead to concessions by one or more Western powers, with the effect of legitimating and otherwise propping up the North Korean regime. And hard experience should have taught us that Kim and his team will cheat on any promises they make and keep building weapons with which to threaten the rest of us. My advice, hold the champagne. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
This lawsuit was just filed against the state of California, its governor and attorney general, for failing to cooperate with federal immigration enforcement.
We're getting no help from the state of California.
The lawsuit marks the latest development in an ongoing feud between the Trump administration and the state of California over sanctuary cities. President Trump at one point even threatened to pull federal agents from the state.
Frankly, if I wanted to pull our people from California, you would have a crime nest like you've never seen in California.
The lawsuit alleges that three California state laws violate the U.S. Constitution, arguing that they illegally prevent federal immigration officials from carrying out their duties. California Attorney General Becerra has defended the state's laws as constitutional.
Our state laws essentially say that we want to protect people's rights to privacy.
and we want to protect their ability to go about their business of going to work, feeding their kids.
Now, this lawsuit was just filed, so the state hasn't had a chance to file its response. And tomorrow, Attorney General Jeff Sessions will be in California, where he is expected to address law enforcement. He's also expected to tell them that with this lawsuit, he is trying to make their jobs safer, and he expects to win.
All right, that's from CBS. Excuse me. This happened last night. Attorney General Sessions filed a lawsuit on behalf of the Justice Department against California for interfering with federal enforcement of immigration laws. And he's going to be announcing it today at noon. So you'll hear a lot about this today. He's going to be at a law enforcement gathering in Sacramento. And we already know, you know, how they send out the remarks ahead of time. So what he's going to say, in case you want to know, is that the Trump administration will fight these unjust, unfair, and unconstitutional policies that have been imposed on you. Talking to the officers, what's happening is, according to what I'm reading, as you might likely figure out, police officers especially are being caught in the middle because California is telling them to ignore federal law. The federal government is telling them to enforce federal law, and there are steep penalties if you don't obey either. And the same thing's going for businesses. It's creating so much chaos, and it's, of course, worse than that. We know that California, whoever that was that spoke in that clip just now, is talking about we want to protect people from the right to take care of their kids. And yeah, but we also know they're protecting the right of illegal immigrant criminals to go back out on the streets and do whatever it is that they're going to do next. And I'll give you some examples of that, but I want to get more detailed here. Now, this is a report from Fox. Again, you're going to hear more about this today, but I just think this is really interesting. There are three laws that were recently passed in the state of California that are being particularly addressed by the Attorney General's move here. And General Sessions says the Department of Justice and the Trump administration are going to fight these unjust, unfair, and unconstitutional policies. We are fighting to make your job safer and help you reduce crime in America. That's what he's going to say to these law enforcement personnel in Sacramento. Jerry Brown fired back. At a time of unprecedented political turmoil, Jeff Sessions has come to California to further divide and polarize America. Jeff, these political stunts may be the norm in Washington, but they don't work here. Sad. So the Attorney General is the one that's polarizing America, not California, with these laws that absolutely ignore the federal government's right to establish immigration policy. That is constitutional. And it is creating chaos. And, of course, it's allowing criminals out on the streets. We'll just start with criminals. To perpetrate their criminality against American citizens. Like as in the case of the death of the shooting on the pier of Kate Steinle. It's unbelievable, the nonsense. But let me go back to these laws. One of these has mandated that employers have to demand that ICE agents present a warrant or a subpoena before entering certain areas of the premises, and also when they have to need to access some employee records. Another one, another state law, which is called a Sanctuary State Bill, protects immigrants without legal residency by limiting state and municipal cooperation with the feds, including what information can be shared about illegal immigrant inmates. And a third one gives state officials the power to monitor and inspect immigration detention facilities, either run directly by or contracted through the U.S. Department of Homeland Security. So the Justice Department's argument on this is going to be the Constitution's Supremacy Clause, which gives broad authority to supersede state laws that says interfere with immigration enforcement obligations. And, of course, we know that Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf, remember what she did last week? She warned her community. She sent out word to everyone that the ICE agents were going to do a raid the next morning. And I think, as I understand it, 800 criminals got away because of that. And this is what she said, Mayor Libby Schaaf. Oakland is a city of immigrants. We will continue to exercise our legal right to exist as a sanctuary city. We will continue to inform all residents about their constitutional rights, and we will continue to support California's sanctuary status. You know what? Non-citizens don't have any constitutional rights. I hate to tell you, but the Constitution protects American citizens. That's the thing under which we all bond. That's how we all can become Americans. It's by embracing and honoring our Constitution and the rule of law. Non-citizens who are here illegally don't have the same protections as American citizens. I mean, she just must not know that, right? So I want to go back to this. This is an article by San Francisco Gate. It's sfgate.com. That's the outlet. There's a new law, California's SB 54, which took effect this year. It prohibits police from notifying federal agents that an immigrant is about to be released from custody. The law also prohibits jails from holding migrants for federal agents and bars police from asking detainees about their immigration status and denies immigration officers access to local jails. I could go on and I will. Hang on one second. This last thing, again, Attorney General Sessions is going to be in Sacramento today speaking to these law enforcement officers, and we'll see what happens. I think he's pretty confident he can win this one. We'll see. It'll probably go to the Supreme Court. We'll see what they do. And, of course, there's a reason why I don't think I'm going to have time. Yes, I do. I have time for this report. William LaJeunesse actually did a report that relates to this. So we discussed yesterday how many illegal immigrants are voting, registered to vote through the Motor Voter Program, and are claiming rights of citizens. William LaJeunesse has a report on what the Obama administration is trying to do through the 2020 census. Let's listen to William.
You cannot know your country unless your country knows you.
A simple proposition, suddenly controversial.
It is the marginalized population that we need to work very hard at getting to cooperate and counted.
From Congress to likely the courts, Democrats want one question removed from the next census. Are you a U.S. citizen?
Adding a citizenship question for 2020 will probably make the census less accurate, because more people will have fear of filling out this form.
The census isn't just a decennial headcount. It actually is a snapshot of America.
Every decade, the federal government conducts a census. Prior to 1950, the survey asked residents if they were citizens. An attempt by the Trump administration to reinstate the question is drawing fire.
Census in 2020, redistricting process in 2021.
In a piece titled, Who Counts? How the Trump Administration's Scheme to Rig the Census Threatens American Democracy, former Attorney General Eric Holder argues the president is using the question to scare minorities not to participate, robbing blue states of political power in the 2021 redistricting.
An inaccurate census will be counterproductive to all Americans.
The census determines how many congressional seats each state receives and how Washington distributes billions in federal funds.
The question is whether we should include people who are in the country illegally for the purpose of allocating representation. And the answer to that is no, we should not.
One in six households are still asked the citizen question on the long form, but the Department of Justice wants it on the full census for a more accurate count. The Commerce Department has until the end of the month to decide.
All right, we discussed this at length a couple of weeks ago. You may remember, in fact, Adam, we should put that interview we did, I believe it was with Mike Gonzalez of Heritage, on the census question back on our Facebook page so people can understand how serious this is. Because as was just described in that little clip, the powers that be use the census every 10 years to assess how many citizens live in a certain area. And that's how they decide how many congressional districts there will be. And there is money to tie to all of that. Huge money. So if you're going to count non-citizens, that makes no sense except to the left to count non-citizens. They don't have a right to vote. They don't have a right to these grants and this money. And if, you know, places like California are allowing, which they are, out of control illegal immigrant populations, then it's their problem to provide in their local governments, in their schools. Let the state worry about it because they ask for it, and now they need to fix their own problem. And those of us that write out our tax checks every year should not have to pay for unlimited a constant strand of illegal immigrants flowing into this country, especially even some of them criminals. It's just amazing. In fact, let me go to this next story. I mentioned to you already Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf, who last week warned her community in Oakland, a community-wide announcement that the ICE agents were going to be conducting raids the next morning. And so they're estimating that they arrested 232 illegal immigrants that morning, but they think about 800 got away. So let me just give you the breakdown here. According to a report by Fox, the arrests included 115 who had prior felony convictions for serious or violent offenses, such as child sex crimes, weapons charges, assault, or had past convictions for significant or multiple misdemeanors. Acting ICE Director Tom Holman was on Fox and Friends, and this is what he said. They were not able to locate 800 illegal immigrants as a result of Mayor Schaaf's warning. What she did is no better than a gang lookout yelling police when a police cruiser comes into the neighborhood, except she did it to an entire community. This is beyond the pale. This is a whole new low to intentionally warn criminals that law enforcement is coming. Schaaf, the mayor of Oakland, said, "I did what I believe was right for my community, as well as to protect public safety." And she said, "People should be able to live without fear or panic and know that their rights and responsibilities, as well as their resources, should be able to live without fear or panic and know their rights and responsibilities as well as their resources, recourses." Sorry, that's what didn't make sense. So the same thing, they don't, if they're not there legally, they don't have rights. They don't have rights. If we allow illegal immigrants to live among us, it is because we are kind, because we are poorly governed, but sometimes it's kindness. But it's not a right. It is not a right. It's not a right for them to draw Social Security or public welfare or benefits, or for the kids to come to our schools or go to our emergency rooms and hospitals. It is not a right. It is a privilege that we help them, that we share our resources with them. And it's something that we can stop if we need to, if it's hurting our own people, which I would argue it is. But of course, the mayor of Oakland would disagree with me. On with this Fox article, it goes on to say, among those caught in the raid were immigrants with a lengthy list of convictions, including aggravated assault, murder, hit and run, lewd acts with a minor, burglary, cruelty toward a child, indecent exposure, domestic violence, drug trafficking, battery, sex offenses, and false imprisonment. All of those kinds of people are still on the streets of Oakland, but the mayor, Mayor Schaaf, she did what was right. This is how serious, and this is why the backdrop of Attorney General Sessions going to California today, speaking in Sacramento to law enforcement who are frustrated beyond measure about what they can do to enforce the law out there. And one last story that I didn't get to, but it's so important, I need to get to this, and that is that North Korea has indicated that it's willing to talk to America about possibly reducing its nuclear capabilities. Now, you heard Frank say in his commentary before we started this last segment that he doesn't believe this is a serious effort. I don't either, actually. But nevertheless, to have North Korea actually express that they're interested in, but even admitting, even sort of giving any sign whatsoever, is pretty big, I have to tell you. Of course, don't look for the news media to give President Trump any credit on it today, because you know how that goes. This would be big news under any other circumstance. But you just heard Media Research Council's study pointing out that 91% of the coverage of the president is negative. So don't look for them to give him credit for this breakthrough with North Korea. Well, there you go. Lots of news today. Back tomorrow. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.